All right, this brings us to the center of all of the history of mankind, and that center is Jesus Christ. It's all about Him. It's kind of grievous to go through a set of lessons like this and to have spent so much time talking about false gods and false thoughts and imaginations of men and so forth, as if there is no Christ, as if there would be no Christ, as if there is no Christ. It's a hard thing for a Christian to do that, and it should be. Because the really exciting story of history is the story of how God prepared this world for His Son. It's not how God prepared a world to be corrupted by sinful men. Man has done nothing in all of his career from generation to generation on this planet except make a mess of everything. Now, that mess has never been outside of God's control. However, man has failed. He has failed and failed and failed and failed. The track record of man is not good in history. All right? You know, some people may lay some claims that, well, we've done pretty good in the last 200 years with all of our toys and things. Even if we conceded to that, and I won't, but even if we did concede to that, that 200 years is at the tail end of almost 6,000 years of failure. This world was not created for us. Okay? That's one thing that we have to make sure that we're convinced of. We are here, and that's important, and it's important to God within a context. But we're not the primary players here. And that's been the problem with mankind ever since the beginning. Is our attitude that it's all about us. That God created the cosmos because there's something somewhat special about man. And that just is not so. What's special is one man. And that one man is who God made everything for. And that one man is the God-man, Jesus Christ, His own Son. And He is superior to all of us, infinitely. And we have to make sure that we understand that because if we don't, then we can never give Him the majesty and glory that He deserves. Because this man is Himself our own Creator and Sovereign. And so this is all about Him. We are in His train. We are in His triumph. The story is about Him. It's about a world that denied the Creator. It's about a world that is being reconquered by the Son of God to the purposes of God for His glory. So Jesus is the center of all things. If you have your Bibles, open to Revelation chapter 12. And there are a couple of things I want you to remember before we start reading this. The first thing you'll want to remember is the Proto-Evangelium, according to which which is in Genesis chapter 3:15, and it says, "And I, God speaking, I will put enmity between you and the woman," he's speaking to the serpent here, Satan, "between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed." And then he goes to the singular and he says, "He, your seed, he shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel." Now, over thousands of years of time, these words right here were perverted into many lies, deceptions, myths, legends, stories all over the world about heroes and serpents and dragons and people whose constellations are in the sky and all of this kind of stuff. Just the imagination of man has worked this and run it through the meat grinder of human imagination until it's almost completely impossible to really see the original message that was being given. And in some ways we could say that out of this that we've just read comes that mess of the Roman Empire. That's how it all ended out. Because after all, who is the emperor in the eyes of the pagan? Well, he's the great hero. The one who is going to put his foot on the serpent of barbarism. So there's always the hero, there's always the serpent in the minds of the pagan. But their view of who the serpent is and who the hero is always wrong. It's always someone who is created out of their own imaginations. But when God spoke these words, he wasn't speaking of anything mystical here. He was simply foretelling the future, a propositional future, something that was actually going to happen. And he was saying this to two people who were standing there in the garden after having taken of the fruit and eaten it in company with a snake. They could turn around and look and see that snake. They heard its voice. It was right there before them. The snake was there with them. And God is saying to them, a child of yours is going to stomp his head. And at some level or another, they were supposed to say, you mean his head? That very person's head? And the answer to that is yes. That very person's head right there. Okay? That real? That propositional? That historical? Yes. That real, that propositional, that historical. Don't turn this into myths. Don't turn it into imaginative fiction. Don't turn this into concepts. Don't turn this into anything other than what it's meant to be. I'm telling you, this adversary who stands before you, right, or who slithers before you right now, one day will be destroyed by someone. Someone as real as he is. All right? This battle is a real battle. It is a real war. There will be real casualties that take place over the generations to come. Many and many casualties as the war rages between the seeds until it comes the time when this one comes and crushes him under his feet. All right? Now, with that in mind, go to Revelation 12 and see if this doesn't make more sense to you if you've been tainted by premillennialism. Because this is not in the future, not in our future. This has already happened. A great sign appeared in heaven. A woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain, to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads were 7 diadems. His tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child. And she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God, so that there she would be nourished for the 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. The dragon and his angels waged war. And they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place found for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, and he who accuses them before our God day and night. Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. When does this take place? It already has. This already took place. When Jesus came into the world, born in the time of Augustus Caesar, while Quirinius was the proconsul of Syria, this child was born. Now notice, this is prophetic language. It's set before us in prophetic language, which is given to us in figures. And yet, right in the middle of this prophetic language, there is a propositional historical statement made. Did you catch it? It says, verse 5, and she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was called up to God and to his throne. There's no symbolism involved in that verse. None at all. That child is Jesus Christ. Nobody is described in Scripture as ruling with a rod of iron but Jesus Christ. Psalm 2, Psalm 110. Jesus Christ. He was caught up. He is at the throne of God to this very day. And not only that, but he is named in verse 10. And the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. And that's following him saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom have come. So this isn't something that's going to happen in a 1,000-year reign somewhere in the future. This took place already. When Jesus came into the world, he came into the world to crush the serpent's head. It's not mythology. It is not mythology. It's absolute propositional reality. All right. Now, Jesus did not, as a man, come up to Satan, who was a snake, and smash his head with his boot. That did not happen in physical propositional language. But when Jesus rose again from the dead, he crushed all of the authority that Satan had had in this world, crushed his head, crushed his authority, took away from him all of the magisterium that he had used in order to deceive all the nations the way he had done, took it all away from him, and took to himself the power of the kingdom. And the proto-evangelium was fulfilled. It was fulfilled. And Revelation rounds us out here by making sure we understand the thing that God promised in Genesis 3. Did he fulfill it? Not will he fulfill it, but did he fulfill it? And that's why this chapter is here. This chapter is here to bring us back to the beginning and say, what's it all about? It started with a seed of a woman and a seed of a serpent. And it ends with the seed of a woman and the seed of a serpent. And God did what he said he was going to do. He destroyed that serpent. That was the biggest blow to the Roman Empire right there. Because the Roman Empire, the city of man, was run by Satan. And when the head of the system was crushed in the time that Jesus came into this world, all of a sudden, Rome reeled. And you know what is interesting about that is that Rome very nearly was completely dissolved before the end of the first century. When the gospel began to spread more and more into Rome, and Rome split up during the year of the three emperors and dissolved into civil war that broke the empire into pieces. Suetonius and Tacitus both tell us that for all intents and purposes, the Roman Empire came to an end after Nero was killed. And yet by miracles, they say, and they attribute it to an act of God Himself, the Roman Empire was put back together again under the Vespasian rule, under the Flavian rules, and was allowed to continue on for a season longer until its final dissolution. As if Jesus coming into the world and stamping the head of Satan, ripping his authority out from under him and taking it from him, caused the city of man to nearly fall on its foundations immediately. That's my belief. That resounded, that what happened in heaven there resounded on earth. All right. And so God fulfilled what He set forth to do. We're not talking mythology here now. We're talking reality. It's not a reality that necessarily we can see down here. It's a reality in the whole scope of heaven and earth reality. God prescribing how the war was going to be laid out, preordaining the whole thing, and then bringing it to pass. So that what? So that we can look upon our God and say, He always said He was going to do this, and He did. He did. He fulfilled that promise that He made at the very beginning after our parents took that fruit and ate it and were standing there in the garden in their guilt with us in their loins, guilty too. Because the promise was made to all of us. We heard it through Adam and Eve. And so it was made to us as well. And this is that one who was born in that stable, in that manger, in the early part of the reign of Augustus Caesar, when Quirinius was the proconsul of Syria. In the fourth kingdom, this is that one who was born. And who is he? Who is this person? If only people had listened, had waited and listened, they would have found that all of the desire that they had would be fulfilled in this one person. Because what man lost in the fall, which was the shattering of the image of God within his own psyche, in his own emotion and heart, within everything that makes man, man, is restored in Jesus, who is Himself the express image of God. And in Him, we once again find our identity as those made in the image of God by conformity unto His image, Romans 8. Okay. But we're never going to find that as long as we are making images out of ourselves. As long as we keep the war going here, as long as our imaginations are cranking out new myths, new self-deceptions, more thoughts that are directed towards death and deception. As long as we do that, then we're never going to find satisfaction. We're never going to find out the meaning for what we're doing here. We're only going to find that by finding that meaning in the one who gives meaning to all things, and that's Jesus Himself, the center of history, who is truth. Truth cannot be a concept. That's not enough. Truth has to live. Truth has to breathe. Truth has to give life. Truth has to be dynamic. Truth has to work. Truth has to have eyes and a soul. Truth has to be a living entity. And truth is a living entity. Truth is Jesus Christ. He is truth. If we're going to know truth, we will only know it through Him. Because what does He come here to show us? What is this truth that He has come into the world to enlighten us with? It is the knowledge of God. It is the knowledge of God. We are men without faces, without trunks. We are walking legs in this world until we know God. We've been cut in half. We're nothing but a bottom half. There's nothing of the top of us left. All right? Like what Victor Borge says about Beethoven. You know, he's only from here up. You know, he's talking about him as a bust. You know, his little bust that you put on there. No, but we're really from here down. That's really man. Man, or as C.S. Lewis says, man without torsos. All right. And we're just partial, because we've lost our head in the heavens. We've lost our ability to know. We can't know all, so therefore we cannot know at all. Jesus comes into the world, and in His life, in His death, in His burial, His resurrection, and His ascension, what does He show? He shows God. So that at the end of His life He can say, "He who has seen Me has seen the Father." And the writer of Hebrews can say, now, here at the end of the age, we see Him who is Himself, the effulgent glory of God, the express image of God, Jesus Christ. And He it is, and He alone it is, who is the truth. And so everything is all about Him. And everything has always all been about Him. You know, we get bothered by the fall. And the reason why we do is we can't imagine this idea of God ordaining the fall. You know why? Because we think we're in the center. God ordained for us to fall because we are expendable. And it never was about us. The sooner we learn this, the sooner we learn peace and joy and contentment, being servants of the One it's all about. And the One it's all about is the center of all meaning, the center of all history, the truth Himself, Jesus Christ. So, I like to think about that when I think about Augustus Caesar. In all of his glory and his pomp, his beautiful purple robes, and all of the gold that's hanging off of him, and the power and the majesty that's in him, that's symbolized by that fascist, that axe that he has in his hand, and the extent of his empire with all of his legions, holding all of these territories, prefects with great proconsuls who are more powerful than kings, the emperor of emperors, over all this vast land. And in his life, this child is born, and he doesn't even know. And Augustus probably never heard of Jesus. He lived and died without knowing that his own Creator had been born in a manger, in a stable, in Bethlehem. The One who was going to topple over His kingdom. The One who was going to crush the head of His, Augustus's, God. And was going to take His kingdom away from Him. As totally opposite as any two men can be. Augustus the highborn, Jesus the lowborn. Augustus the man of force, Jesus the man who never bruised the reed, or who had never quenched the smoking flax. Augustus who brought about the deaths of many. Jesus, who brought about the life of many. Augustus, the man who lived in the palace. Jesus, the man who had nowhere to lay his head. Augustus, the famous. Jesus, the obscure. And yet, who do we know now? Who do we know? We know Jesus. Jesus' kingdom lives on. And we know this. We know that He reigns and rules on high. His churches have spread out all over the world. He has his flag down in lands that Augustus never even heard of. There's not a place in the world where He hasn't laid a claim and will complete it with His conquest. He has toppled over kingdom after kingdom after kingdom. He has raised up kingdom after kingdom after kingdom. And all things are made by Him and through Him and for Him. And He's Jesus Christ. And He's what it's all about.